Okay, we're beginning here at the Mishnah on the top of Ayin Chet Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says that Socher Tachamor Olicho Bahar, person who rents out a donkey to take it over the mountainous range, Olicho Bibika, and instead of taking it in the mountains, he took it through the valleys. Bibika, on the other hand, if he hired it to take it through the valleys, Olicho Bahar, and instead he took it up into the mountains, Afilu Zo Eser Milin, Vizo Eser Milin, even though both paths or trips that he took were the same distance, umeita, and it died, chayav, he is responsible for the animal. Right now, it looks like the fact that he changed it is the cause for his culpability over here. The Bali and Tosafot point out, even if the direction or the trip that he took was actually shorter, he still would be responsible because the problem here is the change, not necessarily the amount of distance that he took the animal. So Socher Tachamor Olicho Bahar, person who rents out a donkey to take it through the mountains, Olicha Bibika, and instead he took it through the valley. Imechlika, if it slips or trips in the valley and is injured or killed by that, Patur, he is Patur, because had he taken it into the mountains, which requires much more steady footing, then for sure he would have slipped over there, whereby when he took it into the Bika, which is a much easier area for footing, the animal slipped there, then certainly it would have slipped in the mountains, and therefore he's not considered to be a posheya, and that's why he is patur. Bim huchma, on the other hand, if it overheated in the valley, then chayav, he is responsible for it, because the likelihood of overheating in the valley is much higher than the mountains. The mountains have airflow and cooler air, whereas the valleys, the air is trapped by the mountains, and it's much hotter down there. So the fact that he changed from going to the mountain to the valley likely contributed to the fact that the animal overheated over here, and that is why it's chayav. Olicha bibika, if he hired it to take it through the valleys, olicha bahar, and instead he took it on the mountains, imechlika, over there, if it slipped, he would be chayav, because the likelihood of him slipping on the mountains is much greater than that in the valleys, and therefore his change to go up the mountain is likely what caused it to slip, because it lost its footing in the mountains. Had he taken it through the Bika, it wouldn't have slipped. Bimuchma, on the other hand, if it overheats in this instance, then he is patur, because if it overheated in the mountains where there is plenty of airflow and cooler air, then certainly had he taken it in the valley, it would have overheated. So there are two questions here about the Mishnah, the first of which is, how is this different than the ratio of the Mishnah? That the Gemara will take up as the first thing. Why in the ratio of the Mishnah is there no distinction as to the cause of death? Whereas here in the Seifa, the cause of death is important to determining his culpability over here. The second question, which is raised by Tosafot, is why in this second part of the Mishnah is he patur? Even though, again, in the mountains, if it got overheated, he is patur because he's an ones. It shouldn't have happened. If he had taken it into the Bika, it certainly would have overheated. And similarly, if it slips in the Bika, he's patur because he's considered an ones. But the case here should be a case of tchilato b'pshia, the sofa bones. Over here, when he changed from the location that he was supposed to go to the other location, there was a pshia involved. For instance, if he took it from the valley into the mountains, when he goes into the mountains, there's a higher likelihood of tripping. And he's a posheya then for the possibility of it tripping. Then, in the end, where it overheats, he's an ones. So that is tchilato b'pshia, the sofa bones, and should be chayav. And so Tosafot says, I'm not sure, why is it the Mishnah is poter, the individual over here? So here, Tosafot says over his Chiddush that we discussed extensively back on Daf Mem Bet when we discussed the issues of Tchilato Pshia V'Sofa Bones, which is that there has to be a correlation between the Pshia and the Ones. And that's what Tosafot says over here, V'yesh Lamar, T'lo Michayev El Bones, She'esh Li T'lot, Shem Lo Haya Mishaneh, Efshar Shelo Haya Baha Ones. Tosafot says that there has to be this causal effect, which is that had it not been for the fact that you changed locations, the onus would not have happened. So that is important, that the pshia be contributory to the onus that takes place afterwards. In our instance over here, the fact that he is a posheya, by the fact that he took it from the bigat in the mountains, vis-a-vis slipping, has no contributory effect to the fact that if it overheated, that ones came about because of the pshia. The two are not correlated whatsoever. And therefore, even though there is tchilato pshia v'sofa ones, Tosafot says, even according to that mandamer that says chayav, normally over here he will say patur because there isn't a direct correlation or causation between the pshia that he engaged in, the negligence that he engaged in, and the onus that transpires after the fact. Later on in the sugya, Tosafot, at the end of the Tosafot, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi China Amar, he backs away from this. He explains the whole sugya based on this idea of tekleto pshia b'sof ha'onis. And then he goes in the end and says, maybe there is no onis over here, tekleto pshia b'sof ha'onis, but the whole thing is considered to be a pshia. And he says, l'kach nira, d'lov choshiv hocha pshia b'meshishina. He says, the fact that he merely changed it from one location to the other location is not a pshia. Yachol yizaher u'l'taktek yafet. Because he could have been careful and checked out, shlo tachlok bahar, that it wouldn't slip on the mountain, or shlo titchamim bibigar, it won't overheat in the valley. And therefore, moder bai hocha de patur b'meita kedark, it came to love tchilato b'pshia. Therefore, he believes that there's no tchilato b'pshia over here. Rather, it's because of the change that there was a cause, but that change is exactly what the cause is, not the fact that there was a tchilato b'pshia, a silver bonus. And thereby, you could explain this whole sugya as having nothing to do with tchilato b'pshia, a silver bonus, because the truth is that the tchilato was not the pshia, but it was only the sofo that you have to look at, whether the sofo was an onis or a pshia, and that will determine the culpability, because the fact that he merely changed it is not enough of a reason to believe that he's a posheya. So those are the two ways to deal with this part of the Mishnah, and to either explain it in the context of tchilato b'pshia b'sof ha'onis, or to say that it isn't your classic case of tchilato b'pshia b'sof ha'onis. If the animal overheated or had the problem because of the ascent, then he is chayav. The Balei Tosafot here discuss, how do you know whether it was because of the ascent or not because of the ascent that he overheated? The Balei Tosafot suggests that if we see during the ascent that he is heating up and overheating, then it's clearly connected to the ascent. On the other hand, if he makes the ascent without overheating, and then later on when he's walking or doing the work, whatever it is, after he's already completed the ascent, then he begins to overheat, then we would not connect or correlate that overheating or that problem with the ascent. So you have to look at whether the problem that was precipitated actually started during the ascent, and then you can blame the ascent for the problem. On the other hand, if the ascent was completed and the animal was totally normal, and then only afterwards was there a problem that arose, then you would not necessarily directly connect it or correlate it with the ascent. Therefore, if it overheated during the ascent, that's clearly a problem in the ascent, and they would be culpable for that. If it only overheated when it was at the top of the mountain on a flat plateau, then we would say it has nothing to do with the ascent, and that there was something wrong with this animal, and if it had been in the Bika, it would have been even more susceptible to overheating. A socheret hachamor, someone who rents a donkey, v'hivrika, and we loosely translated it was hit by lightning, but something happens to the animal that renders it somewhat incapacitated, so that it can still do the work it was supposed to do, but it does it in an inhibited way. Osha nasit angaria, or it was confiscated or pressed into service for the government. Angaria was the governmental requirement that if they needed your animal, your workers, or you, they could press you into doing that on behalf of the public at large. And we'll see in the Gemara that that had different types or manifestations, how the government pressed that into service. And in each of these cases, Omer lo arei shalcha lefanecha, the maskir can say to him, you have the donkey, deal with the donkey. Obviously, the assumption here is that the donkey, in its inhibited state, can still do the work, just at a slower pace. And same with the government confiscation, that it might be a delay in his ability to do it, but eventually he'll get the animal and be able to utilize it in that case. And therefore he can say, it was your bad luck that caused the problem. And therefore you have to deal with the problems that arose. Meita o nishbira. On the other hand, if the animal dies or breaks, meaning that it's unable to accomplish the work that it needs to do, chayav lamid lo chamor. Then the maskir has an obligation to replace the chamor that was lost over here. Most of the Rishonim assume that's only when he said chamor stam, that he said, I'm going to rent you a donkey. In that case, he has to replace the donkey that he gave him. On the other hand, if he said chamor zeh, this donkey in particular, then he is not chayav to replace it, although he might be responsible with the proceeds from that animal that died to hire a new animal, but not in excess of that. He will not have to add any more money if he says chamor zeh, because the limits of his liability are to the amount of the value of the chamor in particular, because he said chamor zeh. Both Rashi and the Ramban over here note that if he does not replace the donkey, he can simply hand him back the schirut, the amount of money that he paid over here, whereas the other Rishonim believe that there was some sort of kinyan that obligated the maskir over here, and therefore the maskir, the owner, does not have a right to back out and just say, here's your money back. He has to provide him with a replacement, whereas the Ramban and Rashi believe that he has the choice of either replacing the animal or providing him the return of the rental that he put here. Some of this might have to do with whether you have an ability to create a kinyan here, or what is the kinyan by which he locked into having to provide the rental. So now the Gemara asks the question that we noted in the Mishnah, Mishna Resha Delo Kamaflig, or Mishna Seifa De Kamaflig. Why in the Resha does it simply say the change from the mountain to the valley, or the valley to the mountain, in and of itself makes him culpable? Whereas in the Seifa, it says it depends what happened when he switched locations. So Amrei Debei Rabbi Yanai, Resha Shemeta Machmat Avir. That in the Resha, the cause of the problem was the air quality in the locations. The Amrinan, that we say, Avira Dahar Katlo, that the air quality in the mountains is what killed him. Raminan, Avira Dabika Katlo, or we say that the air quality in the valley killed him. Now Rashi seems to indicate that this is very similar or akin to what we saw from Abaye earlier on in the Masechta with regards to Tchilato B'Shia B'Sofa B'Ones, that simply changing the location of the animal, the Baal HaBayit can claim that change in of itself caused the animal's death. Like for instance, back there, he said that if the animal's out in the Agma, you can say, Avir the Agma Katla, the change in the air quality in the Agam was a cause for the animal to die. And even though Rava says, Malacham of it, Malihacha, Malihotam, it would have died in either place, their machloket revolved around whether the Baal HaBayit can make this statement or this claim that the mere change in the air quality is enough to say that that is connected to the change in location, and that change is what caused the death. And so, according to Rashi, this seems very similar to Abaye. On the other hand, the Baalei Tosafot say, Tosafot says specifically that you need to know that the air quality there was different or somehow problematic on that day. So again, Rashi seems more akin to Abaye that we saw before, which is the burden of proof is on the socher, on the renter, and not on the Baal. The Baal can just make a generic claim that he took it to a different location and that's why it died. Whereas the Baalei Tosafot see the burden of proof being on the maskir to show that there really was a difference in that location, because generally people take donkeys both in the valleys and into the mountains. Even though here he specified where he wanted to go, the mere fact that he switched isn't enough of a reason to obligate him or make him culpable in this case. Elam Cain, there was a significant difference that was the cause of the death that we can identify. And therefore, that's the explanation for why the Resha differs from the Seifa. Yosi bar Bechina amar kamon shmeita machmat uvtzina, that it died because of the effort or the work that it undertook. As Rashi says over here, ayefut vigya mimasa, it was from the exhaustion and efforts that it put into moving the load that it had. The person can make a claim that even though it turned out to be tired later on and passed away, it might have been because you pushed it too hard when it went up the mountain. Had you taken it in the valley and it didn't have to expend so much effort in climbing the mountain, maybe it wouldn't have fallen from the exhaustion or died from the exhaustion. And the same is the reverse. Had you not taken it in the Bik'ah and it died from exhaustion, had you taken it into the Har, it would have survived because the cooler air would have made it less exhausted and would have helped it to continue on without expiring from that exhaustion. So even though we don't see signs of overheating or other signs that would indicate why the animal is passing away, nevertheless, in the Resha, he makes a claim that the exhaustion or what caused the expiring of the animal, because the location in which he took it contributed to that exhaustion and the killing of the animal. Again, it's separate from the Seifa, where there was a particular cause for the animal's death, like overheating or slipping. In Tosfot here, continuing what he had originally set out and said that the case here is Tichilato b'Pshia v'Sofa Bones, indicates here that even though in the end it dies Meta Machmat Melacha, which is something that the Socher is not responsible for, nevertheless it began with a Pshia because of the fact that he changed. Since he changed locations, and over here we can correlate between the change in location and the death of the animal, and you can make a claim that that change in of itself was the contributory cause of the death of the animal, therefore it's considered to be Tchilato Pshia B'Sofa Bones Chayav. And he says it's even according to the one who says that normally Tchilato Pshia B'Sofa Bones Pator, over here it is considered to be Chayav because there's such a high correlation between the death of the animal and the change in the location which the Socher took it. So since we can correlate so highly between them, then even according to the one who normally says Tchilato Pshia B'Sofa Bones, over here he would say Chayav. Rabba Amar Kigon Sheikisha Nachash. Rabba says that it's because in the Reisha it got bitten by a snake and it died from a snake bite. Over here it's hard to understand Rabba's position because getting bitten by a snake is a complete donase. And if that's the case, why is he Chayav over here? So Tosfot again says this is Rabba the Shitato, that Tchilato B'Shia B'Sofa Bones is Chayav. Over here there's no direct causal effect, and the change of location is what caused the problem, but you could say, were it not for the fact that you went to this location, it would not have been bitten by the snake. Therefore, it qualifies to be Tchilato B'Shia B'Sofa Bones, and you would have the distinction between the one who says Patur and Chayav, and this is Rabbo the Shitato that says Tchilato B'Shia B'Sofa Bones over here, and that's why he says it is Chayav. Tosfot then discusses how all these answers here relate to the machloket at the Bayin Rava earlier with regards to the animal that dies in the Agam, whether we say Malach HaMavet, Malihocha, Malihotam, versus saying that Avir Da'ava Agma Katlo. And he would says then that all of this Gemara seems then to follow the Shita of Rava, and that's why these Amoraim are trying to come up with the reason why you are responsible for the death of the animal, as opposed to Abayi who can simply say that the animal died because you changed locations. And Avira Dahara, Avira Dabika killed the animal. And that is, even if animal died, Maitakadarka, even if the animal just died, a natural death, Abaye would say that there's no problem here. The Balei Tosafot are bothered by that, to say that all the Amoraim and Shas are arguing in Abaye and following that position of Rava. And that's what leads the Balei Tosafot in the end to suggest over here that the case is not a case of Tchilato Pshia B'Sofa Bones, but rather, the whole case revolves around what happened to the animal in the end. If it slipped on the mountain, that is a pshia. If it overheated in the bika, that is a pshia. And similarly over here, if it got bitten by the snake in that location, it was a pshia. Because the Balei HaTosafot suggest over here, it's known that there are more snakes in the har than the bika, or vice versa. Meaning that the change in location is actually what contributed to the snake bite happening, because you put the animal in harm's way by taking them to the other location. And thereby it would not be, if not for, that caused the problem. Rather, it becomes the direct causal effect of the snake bite happening is the fact that you changed locations. And therefore, even according to the one who says, Tchilato Pshia B'Sofa Bones, over here he would say you are Chayav, because again, there is a direct correlation between the choice of direction or trip that you took, and the fact that it got bitten by a snake. You basically took it into harm's way. And that way, the Tosafot in the end backs away from saying that this Mishnah has anything to do with Tchilato B'Pshia B'Sofa Bones, in order to have it fit according to all the different positions, without having to try in each instance explain why either it is or is not Chayav according to Tchilato B'Pshia B'Sofa Bones. He just claims that the whole thing is not about Tchilato B'Shia B'Sofa Bones, but rather the decision to change in of itself in the latter part of the Mishnah is not Tchilato B'Shia B'Sofa Bones, but rather simply a question of whether you took care of the animal properly in that location or not, versus the ratio where, according to Rabbo, it would be a case where the choice of the different trip or location is actually what caused the problem, and therefore you're considered to be a Posheya. That the Reisha is the authorship of Rabbi Meir, that anybody who changes from what the Balabayit had instructed, Nikra Gazlan, he becomes a thief, and a thief is responsible for anything that happens to the animal, even an ones, because once he becomes or is deemed to be a Gazlan, his responsibilities then extend to returning the animal or the value of the animal, no matter what happens to the animal. And therefore, the Reisha of the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir, whereby by your changing the directions or directive of the owner, you by definition became culpable over there. The Seifa of the Mishnah is according to the Chachamim, who disagree with Rabbi Meir. You're simply changing locations, not enough to make you culpable. It has to be that the change in location is somehow responsible for what happened afterwards, like the slipping on the mountain, overheating in the valley. And that's what makes you liable in this case. And therefore, the Mishnah will be dual authorship, with the Reish of the Mishnah authored by Rabbi Meir, and the Seif of the Mishnah authored by the Rabbanan. We want to know, hey, Rabbi Meir, which Rabbi Meir are we speaking about here, who says that when you change from what the Balabayit says, you are culpable or responsible? Rabbi Meir Ditzabal, if you're talking about Rabbi Meir of the Dyer, it's none. Again, we just saw this with regards to the previous Mishnah, that it referenced to this position or Machloket Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda in the Mishnah of Baba Kama, that this Mishnah, that's not an Otein Semer Letzaba, person who gives over wool to a dyer, Letzboa Lo Adom, he wanted it colored or dyed red, Letzaba Ol Shachor, and instead he made it black. Shachor, he gave it to him to dye it black, Utsiva O Adom, and instead he dyed it red. Rabbi Meir Omer Notein Lo Dmeitz Maro. He has to pay him for the wool that he gave him, and that's it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ima Shevach Yeter Al Yetziah, if the benefit exceeds the value of the cost that he invested in the item, as Rashi notes over here, the cost means the raw materials that he puts into it, not his labor. Notein Lo Et Yetziah, he pays for the raw materials that brought this to this point. Ima Yetziah Yeter Al Shevach, if the cost is higher than the upgraded value of the wool now, Notein Lo Et Shevach, then he gives him the value or the improved value in the item. So Rabbi Huda Shita we already saw, and that is what we mentioned in the previous Mishnah, Kol HaMishaneh Yado Al HaTachtona, that we said yesterday that was Stamlan Ka Rabbi Huda, because that's what Rabbi Huda says here. The dyer who made the change is the one who has the lower hand here. The Baal Bayit is the upper hand, and therefore he pays him the lower of the improvement in the item or the cost to change the item. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir believes that all he has to do is replace the wool that he took from him. So over here, it looks like he's treating the individual like a gazlan. And so if he's treating him like a gazlan, that means when you change the instructions of the Baal HaBayit, you become a gazlan, and a gazlan pays kishat ha-gzeilah, the time that you took the item or the theft. The theft happened when it was wool. And so now that it was stolen as wool, you have to replace it or pay it back as wool. Where it says, mimai. Dilma shiny hotam. Maybe over there the reason is the kanya bishinui maaseh, that there was a change in the item, and the shinui is what made him into a gazlan. It's not simply enough to not follow the directives of the owner, but the fact that you change the item itself, that's what makes you into a gazlan. Now, even though over here the person has no intent to steal it, the Ramban suggests that this kinyan shinui makes it that he is a gazlan, because of the fact that he didn't follow the directives of the Baal HaBayit. And therefore, that's why the Kinyan Shinui works over here. Other Rishonim disagree with the Ramban and say the Kinyan of Shinui has application even outside of Gzeila. The Ramban sees it solely as a vehicle for acquisition when you have Gzeila, and therefore you would have to deem the dyer as a Gazlan, and really be a Gazlan. Now then, other Rishonim believe that Shinui is a functional Kinyan even outside of Gzeila, and therefore over here, they deem it to be a kinyan, even though the person is not technically a gazlan, because he didn't do it intentionally, or he really didn't mean to do it, it was a mistake. Nevertheless, it's considered a kinyan. But that would differ from our case, where he didn't do anything physically to the animal. He changed the path that he took, but he didn't change the animal itself. So maybe Rabbi Meir would say something different over there than he says over here. Eloha Rabbi Meir, demigvat Purim. Maybe it is the Rabbi Meir that we find by the collection of monies from Purim. The Tanya, Migvat Purim, Le Purim. Whatever you collect for Purim has to be used for Purim. As Rashi says over here, whatever was collected for Purim has to be used for the Aniyim on Purim or the Sudat Purim on Purim. Other Rishonim, like the Ramban, suggest that Mikvah Purim, the Purim, is that whatever is collected for Purim has to be expended on Purim. That means if you don't use it this year, you have to keep it for the subsequent year and use it on Purim. So Rashi says that it's all going to be expended on this Purim. The question is, what does it have to be expended on this Purim? And that is the Sudat Purim. Or they have to give it to the Aniyim for their Sudat Purim. On the other hand, the Rishonim, like the Ramban, believe Mikvat Purim and Purim means simply that those monies have to be used for whatever the needs of Purim are, not a particular need, but Purim in general. If you don't use it this Purim, you can use it the subsequent Purim. Mikvat Ha'ir, Lo Ta'ir, the collection for that particular city belongs to that specific city. You can see in the Gra that they eliminates this part of the Girsa according to the Rambam and the Rif. And we're not so careful about this issue. The way that Rashi writes it is, we don't say that they have enough of what they need for this Purim, and therefore the remainder or the extra should go into the Kis Tzedakah. We don't say this, and we continue to purchase items for the Aniyim, despite the fact that they may not necessarily need it right now. Avaluchim et Agalim, we purchase as many animals as we have money for, v'shochatim, and we shech them, v'ochleim otam, and they eat them. V'hamutar yipul the Kis Shel Tzedakah. Whatever excesses you have, that after the fact, we will put that into the Kis Shel Tzedakah. That's the way Rashi learns it. That's based on what he said originally, that the Mikvat Purim, the Purim, is for the Sudat Purim. Therefore, the Braita here suggests that when you collect Purim, it all goes to Purim. That means you expend it on the Sudat Purim, despite the fact that it'll be in excess of the needs of the Aniyim. And if there are leftovers, then we deal with that for the Kis Shel Tzedakah. Whereas according to the Ramban, who believes Mikvat Purim, the Purim means whatever monies are collected for Purim specifically have to be used for Purim, then when it says over here, Ein Medaktekim B'davar, means we don't question when someone shows up and asks for money on Purim, we don't question their motives or whether they're in a need, and therefore we distribute to money, called Poshet Yad Mekabel. Anybody who opens up their hand to receive, we give without checking so carefully. Then, if there's leftovers even after that, they have to be put into the Kis Shel Tzedakah. Tosfot over here questions the Braita from what we know in the Gemara Nerochin, which tells us that if there was a collection for Tzedakah and it exceeds the needs of the Tzedakah, that you're allowed to divert those funds to other purposes that the city or the public needs. Why over here is there a limitation with regards to the monies in Purim? And Tosfot says, Yesh Lamar, the Dafka B'Purim Armin and Hachi, the Ein Lishnot, that is only the case by Purim. And the collection of that particular city that has to be used for that city is also speaking about with regards to Purim. And so that this narrow definition of what you can use the money for is particular to Purim. And the Tosafot goes ahead and says the same thing with regards to the collection of that city for that city. It's also speaking about Purim. And that might also be why the Rambam and the Rif eliminated that from the Girsa or didn't have that in their Girsa, because it's really almost a repetition of you what you said before. It's easy to understand why that would be the case, because the people giving the money on Purim are trying to be Yotzei the mitzvah of Matanot, the Aniyim. And so therefore they want the monies to be distributed and utilized by the Aniyim on Purim itself, and for particularly for the needs of Purim, in order to discharge their obligation of Matanot, the Aniyim. And therefore, it's important in the monies of Purim and the Tzedakah Purim that the purpose and the designation of the money be utilized in such a manner. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Mikvat Purim de Purim, that the collections of Purim are for Purim, Ve'en Ani Rashai, the Kach Me'en Rutsu'ah L'Sandalo, the Ani doesn't have a right to use those monies instead to purchase a shoelace for his shoes or for his sandal, Elim Ken Itna B'Madmad Anshei Ha'ir, unless he has permission from the representatives of the city to reallocate the money in this situation. Divrei Rabbi Yaakov Shamar Mishum Rabbi Meir. It's a little bit of a strange setup in the Braita because it's Rabbi Elezer speaking, and it ends off with Divrei Rabbi Yaakov Shamar Mishum Rabbi Meir, which really makes in the end sound like it is Divrei Rabbi Yaakov Shamar Mishum Rabbi Meir and Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. But over here, the difference is the focus on the recipient rather than the givers. The first part of the Braita is being about the limitations in the people who are distributing the monies, what they have to do with the monies. Over here, this is a limitation on the recipients of the money as to what they can do with the monies that they receive. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Mekel. And Rabbi Shimon over here is lenient that the Ani can use the monies for whatever his needs are. So Gemara explains, Dilma Hotam Nami, Rabbi Meir's opinion over there, that Daita Burim Dayagle, Adaita Demida Achina, Loyoyble. Over there, the Baal HaBayit has a particular intent or a particular need that he's trying to fulfill. And therefore, when he gives the money, that's dedicated to Purim, and he doesn't expect the ani to deviate from that and use it for something else. Whereas, in other situations, even when he gives tzedakah to a particular cause, we're allowed to divert those funds because of the reason that we spoke about before. Here, the Baal HaBayit is trying to discharge an obligation specifically related to Purim. And for that reason, there's a difference in Purim than anywhere else. But that difference also contributes to the fact that the ani is not allowed to change from what the Baal HaBayit instructed. Not because that's a general principle, but rather this is a principle that's particular to Purim, where he needs to discharge his obligation vis-a-vis Matanot the Aniyim on Purim. Although the Marsha distinguishes here between the Malot Purim, where the Ani is utilizing it for himself, versus our case in the Mishnah, where he's utilizing the item, but he's not taking it for himself. He's not actually using up or consuming the item for his own benefit. And so the Marsha distinguishes and says by the Baal HaBayit giving Purim, he expects the Ani to use it for Purim and Purim expenses, that which he doesn't need, that he should return. On the other hand, by the Shimush of the animal, there's nothing that he's taking for himself. He's simply just changing the path or direction that he took. He's not actually taking the object and utilizing it for his own purposes, his own benefits, other than those instructed by the Baalim. And so that's the distinction that the Marsha brings. Ella ha Rabbi Meir. It must be this Rabbi Meir. Tatanya Rabbi Shimon Alazo Meir, Mishim Rabbi Meir. And otain dinar da ani, dikach lo chaluk. Person gives a dinar to an ani for a particular expenditure to buy with it some sort of clothing, a tunic. Lo yikach bo talit. He should not with that money then take or buy a cloak or some overgarment instead of the clothing. Talit, if he gave it for him to purchase a cloak, a jacket, or some outer garment, lo yikach bo chaluk, he shouldn't buy with that a tunic or a basic garment. Ipnei shemavir adulto shel Baal HaBayit, because he is violating what the Baal HaBayit wanted him to do or expend the money on. It says, v'dilma shani hatam, da'atu l'michshedei, because over there it might be different because they might suspect that the Baal HaBayit didn't carry out his commitment to the ani. Damrei inshe, amar planya, because people say, so-and-so said, Zavnina le lebusha, leploni ania. He committed to buy clothing for this particular ani. Below zavn le. And now we look in the end, and the ani still doesn't have clothing. He might have a jacket, he might have an outer garment, but he's still wearing the same clothing. Inami zavnina le glima, or he said or committed to buy an outer garment or a cloak for the ani. Below zavn le. And we bought him clothing, and he's still wearing the same cloak. So the problem is that if we change from what the Baal HaBayit had instructed, it might bring suspicion on the Baal HaBayit that he didn't carry out his neder or his commitment to take care of this ani in a particular way. And therefore, that's why we're not allowed to change it. It's not because we're changing from the dad Baal HaBayit. It's rather that what that change does and causes suspicion about his fulfilling his neder or his obligations over here. Where it says, Imkein litnei b'pnei achashat. And the reason is not because you changed the dad Baal HaBayit, but rather because of the fact that people might suspect the Baal HaBayit. And that's what the Breita should have said. The fact that the Breita gives the reason as being that you violated the instructions or the directive of the Baal HaBayit makes it sound that that is the reason. Therefore you see that it's because he changed the directive of the Baal HaBayit. That is what the problem is according to Rabbi Meir, not the Chashad. And anybody who changes the directive of the Baal HaBayit is deemed to be a Gazlan. And so just like in that case, he's deemed to be a gazlan, so too in the ratio of our Mishnah. If you say that the authorship is attributed to Rabbi Meir, the mere fact that you changed from the directive of the Baal HaBayit makes you into gazlan. Once you're a gazlan, you're responsible for anything that happens to the animal, ones or not ones, you're completely responsible because you now have a responsibility to return the item to the Baalim in the condition at the time that you stole it. And that's why the ratio is different than the Sefer, where the Sefer is looking for a particular cause. And the ratio, it matters not why he dies, just the fact that you changed the instruction or the directive of the Baal HaBayit, because the ratio is authored by Rabbi Meir, who calls you a gazlan in that case. And the Sefer is authored by the Rabbanan, or Rabbi Yehuda, who does not think you're a gazlan in that instance. So, Cheret HaChamor V'Ivrika, in the Mishnah it says someone rents out a donkey and then V'Ivrika, my V'Ivrika. What is it that mean V'Ivrika? Hachi Targumu Nohorita. So it is light. As you can see here in the Masorah Shas, he says, Perish al derech sagi nahor. It's the equivalent of a lashon sagi nahor. Someone who has a lot of light means someone who is blind in a euphemistic way. So to over here, hivrika means bright or clear, and norita means that he has good eyesight. And the truth is, it's just the opposite. It's a euphemism for the fact that he can't see or he is blinded. And he notes over there, hivrika from lashon barak. And hivrika is from lashon of barak, which is like lightning. Some explain hivrika barak from light. Some have it from the fact that hivrika was, there was a bright light that caused it to become blinded. And as if it was struck by lightning, or the sun caused some damage to the eyes of the animal and it's unable to see now or see well. Or the possibility that barak is as if there was some sort of white that went into the pupil or the black part of the eye, which caused the problem here. And then actually it would be similar to what Rava says later about Abzeket, which is instead of being a worm in the eye, there it's a worm in the leg. Rava Mar Abzeket. Which Rashi notes over here is atolaim itliu ragleha. There were worms or some sort of disease that caused a problem in the leg of the animal, which has incapacitated the animal or inhibited the animal from doing the work, but not completely. It still has the ability to do the work, just in a much more cumbersome manner or slower manner than it did before. Or the Ravid suggests that abzeket is actually little spots and stain, white stains that come on the eye. And then it would be the same thing, that the reisha is a case where the white penetrated into the black and either split the pupil or caused the problem with the pupil. And the abzeket is somewhat more akin to maybe cataracts or spots or white spots on the eye. So in those cases, the animal, again, can still do the work, but in an inhibited manner, or it's slightly incapacitated, but the person can say, or shalchal lefenecha, it was your bad luck that that happened to the animal. Rashi, continuing in his explanation, says that the one who said that they were, Rashi says, ash, moths that were eating the clothing of the king. And obviously the moths are hatched from worms. They asked him, what clothing of the king has this? Bitalei kesef, oh, bitalei zahav. Is it with the silver clothing or the gold clothing? Rashi sees that as being euphemistic for, is it with the pishtan, the linen clothing, or tzemer, the wool clothing? Igadami bitzle kesef, famar. Some say that he said back to him that it was in the linen clothing, vikatlua, and they killed him, because moths don't eat linen clothing. So therefore he was completely off base. Igadami bitzle dahav amar. Some say that it was in the woolen clothing, that that was where they found the moths. Vishabku, and they left him, because that's right. Moths eat the wool, and he was helping or identifying for the king that there was a problem in the storage of his clothing. If you look in the Bali et Tosafot, it brings an alternate explanation. It's talking about a pardes, talking about different types of mules. And he rejects that because he doesn't think the wording necessarily supports it. There are some other views or versions of what this is in the Rishonim because of the fact that Tlei Kesef and Tlei Zahav aren't necessarily taken literally here by Rashi. There are others who do try to take it more literally. But in the end, it's just trying to support what Rava said about Avzeket, and connect it to what he thinks of Zeket is, that that was similar to what happened in this situation with the king, to give us or help us define the word of Zeket. Oshnasit angaria, omer lo ashrei lecha v'necha, amarav, lo shanu alen bangaria hochuzeret. It's only in a case where the angaria is given back. Of angaria she'enu chuzeret, chayav lamid lo chamor. It's only true if this confiscation or pressing into service of the animal is temporary. But if it's a permanent confiscation of the animal, then obviously he has to replace the animal, because that's no better than a case of meita, that it died, because it's the equivalent of the animal being taken away completely. So in a case where it's a temporary confiscation, then he has to live with the temporary confiscation. He says that's your bad luck, and you'll just have to continue afterwards. There are many that believe that during that interim period, he does not have to pay him for the rental, because he doesn't have utility of the animal, but when he gets it back, he'll finish up, and then he'll pay him at that time. On the other hand, if it's a permanent confiscation, then he needs to replace the animal, because he doesn't have what he needs that he's paying for. Or you could explain that it means it's taken away for the period of time that he needs it. Doesn't mean it's permanently confiscated, but it's confiscated for sufficient time that already what he needs it for is going to be moot, because the time has elapsed when he needed it. Ushmol amar ben angaria chuzeret, ben angaria sheino chuzeret. Makes no difference whether it's a permanent or a temporary confiscation. In b'derech halicha nitla, if it was taken on the way, omer lo arvei shalcha lefanecha, then he can say it's your problem. Im lav b'derech halicha ta nitla, if it wasn't on his way, chayav lamid lo chamor. Then he has to replace the chamor. The way Rashi explains this is she'angaria molichata lederech shayat zerot alech. That the way that the angaria worked was they used to, if they were going in a certain direction, they'd pass by somebody at a chamor. They'd basically press that chamor and the owner into service to take the chamor wherever they needed to go until they bumped into the next donkey. And then they would let this guy go, then press into service the next donkey that they found. But if it was going the direction that he was going anyway, so then it's not a problem. It's his bad luck that they pressed into service. So he says that it was your bad luck because they were going the direction that you were going. And therefore, you just follow them. And when they give up the donkey, when they replace it with someone else's donkey, you will get it back. And then you can utilize it at that point. But on the other hand, if it was going in a different direction, not the direction that this individual wanted to go, then the Baal can't say to him, follow them, and then go get the donkey and then use it afterwards because it's taking him in a totally opposite direction that he wants to go. The Baal Tosafot, on the other hand, don't love this explanation of Rashi, and therefore they favor the explanation of the Beinu Hananel, which is that if the donkey was confiscated while this individual was using it on the road, then it's his bad luck because he had it out on the road, and that's why it got confiscated. On the other hand, if they came to the house and they confiscated it, then it's the problem of the Baal because they particularly were looking for this animal or they came and took the animal. It wasn't because he was using it outside. So it wasn't his mazel that caused the problem. The Raiva even refines that more. It says that if they simply confiscated the donkeys like they were doing to everybody around there, simply taking them and utilizing them and dumping them, then it's your bad luck. Then if they're coming in particular to take the donkey from this individual because the owner owes taxes or there's something to do with the owner and that's why they're coming to confiscate it, then he can't say, or your bad luck caused it because the owner was the contributory problem over here. Meitave, we have a bright. So Ivrika, Oshinishtatata, so Ivrika, it lost its eyesight or it lost its mind. Omer lo, Shalchalifanecha, he says you got to deal with it. Meita, Oshinasit Angaria, Chayev Nemid lo Chamor. If it dies, or it was pressed into service by the government, or confiscated by the government, he has to replace it. Our Mishnah says just the opposite. That Angaria, you can say, Harishal Chalifenecha. So how do we distinguish between this Braita and our Mishnah? Bishmal Rav Lokasha, for Rav, it's fine. Kan Bangaria Chozeret, Kan Bangaria Sheinu Chozeret. It depends on whether it was a permanent or temporary confiscation, or whether it was for a long duration or a short duration. Elo Shmuel Kasha. For Shmuel, it's problematic because Shmuel says that it's always considered to be an angari, and you can say Rishalach Lefanecha. V'chitem of the Shmuel Nami Lokasha. Why don't you distinguish for Shmuel and say Kan Shbederech Halichata Nitla, Kan Shelo Bederech Halichata Nitla? That would make sense that you could differentiate even within Shmuel. Shmuel says there are times where it's Harishalach Lefanecha, times it's not. So make that distinction between our Mishnah is a case where it's taken Derech Halichata, whatever your explanation is, and then the Braita is the problem is, Hamiltani Seifa, Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, Im Bederech Halichata Nitla, Omer Lo Harishal Chalifanecha. Vim Lav, Chayav Lamid Lo Chamor. So there you see from Rabbi Shimon Elazar that he is the one that makes that distinction, implying, Michlal the Tanakama Lo Shanile, that the Tanakama makes no difference over here. Now, why is that a big deal? Because I'm the Chashmuel, Lav Miiko Rabbi Shimon Elazar, the Kai Kavati. He says, wait a minute, maybe the Tanakama is a problem for me. But I hold like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Anadamik Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. I will hold like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Now, that is a solution to the problem, but as the Baal Tosafot point out, it's not the best solution to the problem, because the Tanakama is more likely to be the Rabbim here, because it's anonymous, versus Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, who's a particular opinion. If that's the case, then we would favor the position of the Tanakama, and we prefer that Shmuel fits into the Tanakama. In the end, Shmuel will have to say, I hold like Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Or, Ibaiteima, the other option, which then would make it easier for this, is Kula, Rabbi Shimon Elazar. The entire Braita is Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Vechasurei Mechzaran, it's missing the transition words there. Rechachiktani, Osucherta Chamor Vivriko Nishtatit, if he rents out a Chamor, and it loses its eyesight, it loses its mind, Omer La Arishel Chalifanecha, Meito Shenasit Angaria, Chayiv Namido Chamor, he has to replace the Chamor. Only if it was confiscated when it wasn't on its way. Like the distinction that Shmuel made, and similar to the one that Rabbi Shimon Elazar made, Divrei Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. That is the position of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Shaya Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer. And those are the transition words that we're missing. In bederech iluha nitla omer lo harei shalchal lefenecha v'imlo chayav namid lo chamor. And therefore Rabbi Shimon Elazar becomes the author of the entire Braita, and therefore it's no longer a problem for Shmuel, because then it's supportive of the distinction that Shmuel made, and the entire Braita is making the distinction that Shmuel made. Omi matzit mukmi la Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Can you really make the whole Braita like Rabbi Shimon Elazar? V'aktani reisha. Doesn't the reisha say, Asucher techamor v'ivriko shinish tatita omer lo harishel chalefenecha? V'ilo Rabbi Shimon Elazar amar. We know that Rabbi Shimon Elazar believes, Asucher techamor lirkov aleha, if he rents a donkey in order to ride it, v'ivriko, and it loses its eyesight, oshinish tatita, it loses its mind, chayav lamid lo chamor, he has to replace the chamor. So we see for Rabbi Shimon Elazar, hivrika nish tatita is sufficient grounds for you to ask for a replacement animal, and not just say, Harisho Khalifanecha. That's not a problem. Amar Rabbi Barhuna, Lirkovela Shiny. To ride it is very different. It's one thing if the animal loses its eyesight, or if the animal loses its mind, the Balim could then accompany the animal or help the animal when it's loaded, and it will take them more effort. It might take them more time, but the animal is still usable for that purpose. If you're riding the animal, the fact that the animal can't see, or the animal is out of its mind, makes it that the animal won't make the right decisions while you're riding on it, and actually will be misakein, endanger the rider. And therefore, that's considered to be something that incapacitates the animal to the point where it's no longer usable for its original purpose. And therefore, you could say that Rabbi Shimon Elazar is the author of that entire braita, because what he says over here is particular to riding. Now, Rav Papa, klei zuchuchit, kederukov alei adami. If you are transporting glassware, then that's the same thing as riding on it. Because the animal is more clumsy or less stable when it has lost its eyesight or it's not completely there, so even though the Balim can utilize it in an incapacitated or inhibited manner, but they do lose a certain amount of the stability that would come from an animal that didn't have those problems. Therefore, if you're transporting glassware, it's no different than transporting a human, where it's very important that the animal stay on track, and it's very important that the animal make the right decisions and keep everything stable there, because otherwise you'll either injure the person or you will ruin the glassware that is being transported. And therefore it has the same status as Kurokovala, and therefore in that case it would be deemed to be an incapacitation that is worthy of replacement, because the animal is no longer usable for the intended purpose that it was hired for. Okay, we're going to stop over here, 11 lines down on the top of Ayin Tet Amud Aleph.